All right, Lauren, is it me or does it seem like there's just a ton of stuff going on right now? Plans, trips, events. In fact, we're both headed to a little thing called VidCon next week. Why don't you first tell everyone what you'll be doing there?
Who, me? Well, I'm heading to VidCon in Anaheim with Jelly Smack. They'll have lots going on, including a booth on the industry track. And then I will be speaking on a really cool panel about how to make your content work harder for you, which is a huge topic. What's your plan there, Josh?
Oh, just me and you emceeing the industry track main stage for 2 days. No big deal.
NBD. Oh, right. How did I forget to mention that you and I are doing that? Just kidding. I'm actually really, really excited about it. VidCon is huge. I think 15,000 creators, platform innovators, and fans all go to learn about the creator economy and just have a good time. You and I emceeing VidCon means we've made it, guys.
I'm excited to do this with you. And you mentioned you'll also be on the panel. Who else is going to be up there with you?
I am joining the talented creators, Julia and JP of Healthy Junk Food, and the super smart Colin and Samir are moderating.
That is a healthy lineup. See what I did there? Okay, so if you're going to VidCon, which is June 22nd through the 25th, look out for me, Lauren, and Jelly Smack. They'll have a booth and two panels on the industry track, plus another panel on the creator track. Anything else that people need to know?
Come join us. Visit blog.jellysmack.com and click on the VidCon article at the top left for more details and everything that's going down. That's blog.jellysmack.com. See you there.
This week on Creator Upload, Lauren and Josh, that's me, we got some press. YouTube is heralding the dawn of the age of the multi-format creator. A Facebook memo leaks and some hard numbers that show how successful influencer marketing can be.
Welcome to Creator Upload, your creator economy podcast. I am Lauren Schnipper.
And I am Joshua Cohen. Lauren.
Yes.
I know you're not in the press that often, so this is probably a big moment for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I were recently featured in a Business Insider article among the top creator economy podcasts to listen to.
I mean, slow clap. 3 years later, people are noticing us. Very excited to announce Business Insider. Yes, they featured us in Creator Economy Insiders Pick, their 12 favorite podcasts that help them understand where the industry is heading. And we are on there. And I got to tell everybody, when you go to that article and you see that picture of Josh and I just want to say two words. You, I guess it's three words. Three words. You are welcome. I made Josh and I do a photo shoot when I was in New York City about a week or two ago. And all I have to say is I had no idea that this was happening. I was just like, we're doing the VidCon thing, which we've talked about. I'm seeing the industry track. Josh literally has a blurry selfie. That's like what I get from him if there's ever a photo needed. And I was like, you know what? We need to get some photos. And if I may say so myself, we look fantastic. And we're in this. And I'm very excited. Thank you to Business Insider. Thank you to Avi Gandhi, who I want to have on the podcast, by the way. He's the Patreon's head of creator partnerships, done for a long time. Of course, Chris LaMontagne, Spring CEO. Lindsay Gamble, who I don't know. Associate Director of Influencer Innovation at Maverick. Somebody we don't know. These are the three people that recommended, that they said recommended our podcast. Josh, people we don't know listen to our podcast.
It's incredible. I know this is a big moment for you. You know, I've been here before.
Yeah, sure.
So it's no big deal.
Yeah, but
I'm happy for you and by the transit of the property for us.
Yes. No, this is very excited. Thank you to Business Insider. We're very excited. I feel like going into VidCon with this kind of, you know, wind in our sails just feels really good.
And among good company too. If you have a Business Insider subscription, go check it out. If not,
yeah,
maybe.
Or just like have somebody screenshot it and send it to you. Like, anyway, no, didn't say that. Okay. Check it out. Tell all your friends. We're very grateful. We're very excited. Thank you so much. All right, Josh, let's get into it. All right. First big story is, Josh, it's summertime. Get the scissors out, cut your pants, put your shorts on, because YouTube has reached 1.5 billion users on Shorts. Josh, your dream has come true. They have now a new term. They've dubbed multi-format creators, or the type of creators that do both Shorts and everything else. So according to YouTube, 1.5 billion logged in users now access YouTube Shorts each month. It's become a big part of the business, but it is not advising creators to go all in on Shorts. Very, very notable. So Tara Walpert-Levy, YouTube's VP of the Americas, said YouTube Shorts offers an exciting new way to be a part of a viewer's journey and to introduce themselves and their whole portfolio to new audiences. This approach is yielding real results. Channels uploading both Shorts and long form content are seeing better overall watch time and subscriber growth than those uploading only one format. So they are very much saying don't just do shorts. They want you to do everything. Why do they want you to do everything? Because all the advertising is still on the long form content. They haven't figured out advertising on the shorts. So if you put all the content on the shorts, then they can't advertise it. Whether or not that helps the algorithm or your numbers at all, that would screw them if you just did shorts.
Well, you too, to be fair. That's where they're splitting most of the revenue with creators.
Yeah, of course, obviously. But like, you know, of course. And then Neil Mahan, who is YouTube's chief product officer, said, when we introduced Shorts, we knew that we were bringing an important new format to the YouTube repertoire for creators. But a powerful byproduct has been seeing all of the amazing new ways that Shorts is helping invigorate a creator's existing channel or inform a new content strategy. I just have to say to everybody, Joshua Cohen has been a fan of Shorts since day one. He loves the lower leg. He has been so excited about this. He felt like this was going to be huge. I wasn't as sure, and looks like it. I think we got something here. What do you think, Josh?
Lauren, what's with the? I got to check the astrology or the charts or the air or the water in LA. Like you've been giving me some credit and apologies these last couple episodes.
Well, we're going to be doing this thing in person together in like a week, and so I need to like.
So you want to be a little bit nicer to me and ingratiate yourselves towards me before we're on stage together?
I'm manipulating you 100%. Like I'm literally. This is all by design, and this is like. Completely. Yeah, no, this is, there's like a full on agenda here. So like, I'm not, yeah, go on.
That's fair. That's fair. I'll take it. Yeah. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously I knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. YouTube needed to make an investment in order to capture the top of the funnel in terms of creators. TikTok makes it incredibly easy for anyone to create content that's super compelling and very easily discoverable because of the nature of its FYP algorithm page. And YouTube needed to compete because 10 years ago, YouTube was the place to go if you had any type of video content.
Sure.
And now it's seen as the kind of premier place to go for your very well-produced, structured, well-thought-out online video program.
Like after, it's not where you go first. It's not where people were going first anymore, I think is really the point, right?
Right. And so if you're a content creator, it's really easy to make compelling TikToks, really hard to make a several minute long YouTube video that's going to be discoverable in the YouTube algorithm and get you lots of views. Mm-hmm. So YouTube needed to create something to compete with TikTok on that. And so they just created a little bit of TikTok. And it seems to be working out really well for them. And I think at the beginning of all of this, when YouTube first launched Shorts, there was this question of, are there going to be Shorts creators? Are there going to be long form creators? By the way, slight aside, I'm just calling them long creators, maybe long form creators. I'm calling them Shorts and longs. People call them Shorts and pants. I don't like the pants thing. It's a little bit too much for me.
Really? I feel like it's like perfect for you.
Kind of. I like Shorts and longs.
Uh-huh. Shorts and trousers, maybe?
No, I'll call them longs or long format creators. So there's this question of what type of creators are going to be on the platform. Are there going to be just Shorts creators, just long format creators, or a mix? And it seems like YouTube really wants to promote this idea of there being this multi-format creator that can really thrive on YouTube. And it makes total sense. If you look at lots of the data, they highlight a couple channels that have done particularly well by having a combination of Shorts and longs on their channel. There's Baker Rosanna Pansino.
Yep.
There's filmmaker Ian Boggs that they talk about. Cassie Ho from Blogilates was someone that appeared at YouTube Brandcast that discussed how the advent of the YouTube Shorts platform gave her an ability to more consistently maintain some type of presence with her audience and communication there, and also a greater ability to market her other products through YouTube.
You just reminded me, I'm a big Cassie Ho fan, and you just reminded me that I started her 30-day ab challenge, and then I forgot about it. Go on.
And you may have seen that through a YouTube short because she's been doing a lot of that to market lots of her products.
Yeah.
And so I think the way to wrap your head around this is the YouTube longs, the long form content on YouTube, are kind of like the final product. Mm-hmm. And that's where the vast majority of creators make a lot of their predictable revenue that they can mm-hmm. count on month after month. Mm-hmm. And it's a big chunk, if not the biggest chunk, of lots of creators' businesses. And the YouTube Shorts is basically like marketing for that longer form content.
Right.
And the channel and whatever other ancillary products they have that they've been able to build successful business around because they've built up this big, huge audience. So I think it took us a while to get here. Actually, not that long, maybe like a year to get here.
Yeah.
But this is, I think, the definitive path that YouTube will recommend creators take moving forward. And I'm 100% sure they'll be highlighting a ton more of these multi-format creators in the not-so-distant future. That's not to say that every creator will have shorts and longs on their channel. Like, there is this idea of creators wanting to maintain whatever type of identity they have on their channel and being very particular about the type of content they place there. So I don't think Mr. Beast is ever, at least not in the near future, going to have shorts and longs on his primary Mr. Beast channel. He's a separate Mr. Beach Shorts channel for that. And there will be some creators that just like the idea of keeping it separate. That's their own aesthetic and they can totally do that. That's cool. But, you know, fast forward 5 years in the future, vast majority of creators that have come up in the last 5 years, I think are going to have a combination of both.
I think I love the Rosano Pantino example. So she's been a creator around forever. I mean, I just looked when she joined YouTube in 2010 and she said that, she has doubled her viewership on her main channel year over year since she started using shorts. And I watched a couple of her shorts and she's doing like very, very different content. She's doing like silly content that's more personal and obviously short. So it's not like doesn't go crazy deep, but it's like, it's a totally, you know, for lack of a better sort of phrase, a different side of her, you know what I mean? That you haven't really seen, despite the fact she's been on YouTube for so long, because her stuff is like historically like very polished and, you know, cooking and all the different things. And so very interesting. I think there's been, you know, about a while ago, we were seeing some stats that like people that were doing really well in shorts, it wasn't really helping their main channel. So it seems like that has changed, which is exciting to hear. And I'm sure, you know, again, I had heard that these two entities within YouTube were like, they weren't gold towards each other. Like the shorts team wasn't gold, like, oh, to help make the long form content better. It was like, we want to build our own shorts ecosystem. But I'm sure like nobody's mad that this is now the byproduct of it is that it's building towards long form content. I think the big question here is like, what does it look like if monetization becomes a real thing on shorts? Because then you run the risk of kind of cannibalizing the long form, right? Like if all the ads start going one direction, that kind of happened in some ways, not really around ads in some ways, but with stories and feed on Instagram, like once stories was launched, like it was like a huge hit right away. And then people stopped hosting on the grid. Like they just stopped hosting on the main grid on Instagram. So they were like, okay, how do we like, now we've built up this other muscle. Now we got to like build up the original muscle. So you have to be careful and sort of that balancing act, making sure you're not cannibalizing your own product, but very interesting, exciting.
Yeah, to be clear, the people that were really successful in shorts and had these huge, like out of nowhere, billion view count months on YouTube, they still have to build up their own library of content in order to be successful on the platform. I think that the flash in the pan, huge shorts creators are just that, kind of a flash in the pan. And if they want any type of longevity, they need to develop some type of brand. And usually that goes along with creating compelling long-form content that's going to live on YouTube that people can come back to or look forward to every week. And you talk to lots of managers of TikTok stars, and it's really hard. There's this small number of TikTok stars that have had this escape velocity to get through all the noise and maintain some type of consistent viewership, where there's lots of others that can get millions of views a month and then get thousands of views the next month.
Right.
Because TikTok has made it so you don't need to go to the creators you like and love. You just open the app and you get fed whatever.
Well, it's really great with discovery, but then once you've gotten big, yeah, sometimes it's hard to maintain it. I've heard that.
Yeah, in a sense, it's turned kind of entertainment into a little bit of a commodity where everyone can create it. It doesn't really matter who you're seeing, but you're being entertained for a half hour when you open the app.
Right, right. You don't really care. I'm just like, give me more like really intense like rug cleaning videos. I don't really care.
You're on rug talk?
I am rug talk. Anyway, yeah, very exciting stuff. Heading into VidCon with these big announcements. I have a hunch we're going to hear more exciting things. Usually historically around VidCon, you do hear a lot of fun like announcements, product announcements, big numbers coming out. So I'm expecting more where that came from. Switching gears. So there was a very interesting article on The Verge called Facebook is Changing Its Algorithm to Take on TikTok. Leaked Memo Reveals. This was by Alex Heath. Usually on this podcast, we don't go like super deep, just like on one particular, like not opinion piece. Not that this is an opinion piece, but it's kind of like, what would you call this? Like a expose of some sort on that one person writes. But this is just good stuff. So I think this was good reporting. So what this article is saying is that Tom Allison, who is the new-ish head of the Facebook app, wrote a memo that was leaked that is spelling out a plan to effectively make the news feed, which actually recently was officially dumbed the feed. They don't say news feed anymore. More like TikTok, for lack of a better word. So basically, they say in the article, rather than prioritize posts from accounts people follow, Facebook's main feed will, like TikTok, start heavily recommending posts regardless of where they come from. And years after, this is a big one, and years after Messenger and Facebook split up as separate apps, the two will be brought back together, mimicking TikTok's messaging functionality. I think this is really significant. Is this totally going to be completely together again? Can I not have my own separate Messenger app? That really bums me out. This is like years ago, they actually separated out the Groups app and they realized that people just wanted Facebook for the groups and they didn't want to go to the newsfeed, and then they reintegrated it. And so Tom Allison said, the risk for us is that we dismiss this as not being valuable to people as a form of social communication and connection, and we fail to evolve. The new goal for Facebook is to build the discovery engine, a phrase also that Zuck mentioned during his most recent earnings call. And then it goes on to say, this article says, Allison acknowledges that the company was slow to see the competitive threat of TikTok, even as it initially grew, wait for it, by blanketing Facebook and Instagram with ads. But now Meta sees the video app as increasingly encroaching on its home turf of social networking, with Allison pointing to the increasing prominence of private messaging in TikTok and the introduction of a dedicated tab for viewing videos from friends. I think the thing we probably didn't fully embrace or see was how social this format could be. So there's so many bombs that were dropped there. So number one, we have the messenger going back in to the main app, which is like, you know, again, I just find that personally, I'm not excited about that. And the fact that, and I knew this, but TikTok grew by posting ads on Facebook and Instagram. So they literally like destroyed the competition by using the competition.
And YouTube as well.
It's crazy and interesting. And I wonder how long they were doing that before somebody higher up kind of like was like, yo, maybe we should chill out selling all these ads to TikTok. Because, you know, there was some dude sitting in some office that was making a killing off of that.
I don't think they can though, right?
Yeah, you can say there's no inventory.
Sure, you can say there's no inventory, but I don't think you can selectively exclude competitors from advertising on your open platform.
I don't know what the sort of rules. I will say, though, that years ago, there was a company called Diply. I don't know if it still exists, but it was this, as you probably remember, it was this company that created these like really bad kind of meme-y websites and go sell me this and that. And a lot of these creators that were really big on Facebook couldn't make any on Facebook because we didn't have any monetization. So they would make these deals with Diply and get paid like $10,000 a month to like, or whatever it was, to like post these like, you know, links on their Facebook feed. And then it would thus like downgrade them in the news feed because it was against our policy. So the stuff that Diply was producing was basically against Facebook's policy. Yet, so we were telling these creators, like, don't post this stuff. Like, it's going to mess up your sort of you and the algorithm. Yet there was a guy sitting in Canada, because I think Diply was a Canadian company, who was selling ads like gangbusters to Diply because he was making a ton of money on it. So he's reaching out to me being like, hey, I've got this client, Diply, that wants to work with your creators. And I'm like, dude, it's against our policy. So like, I don't know. Like, obviously it's not against the policy for a TikTok to, you know, post ads on Facebook. But like, there's gray area there. That's great. I don't know. If they're a company, they're not a government organization. Can't they just deny? I don't think you have to accept.
I just feel like it could get into a little bit of trouble in scary waters when they're already worried about all of these antitrust issues in general.
I think what this is interesting too is that like, so they tout in this article, he says the last major overhaul of the Facebook feed experience was in 2018 when I was there, when Zuckerberg said the social network would prioritize meaningful social interactions between friends and family. In its quest for engagement, Facebook had grown crowded with brands trying to gamify its algorithm. According to Zuckerberg, the change was about returning Facebook to its roots. So this was a huge change. So basically, I was there when video was huge at Facebook, and we were telling all these creators, you do video, it'll be huge. And then one day, people woke up and they were like, I don't get to see what my friends and family are doing anymore. I don't want this anymore. So Zuckerberg was like, okay, we're going to reprioritize this and make it so you see what your friends and family do. And we're going to do what they called meaningful social interactions. Well, what that actually manifested to mean is that meaningful social interactions, the algorithm picked up when people were like commenting on each other. Well, when are people commenting on stuff the most is when it's really divisive and sometimes untrue, false, whatever content, but stuff that's really divisive, for lack of a better word. And it made Facebook sort of a very toxic environment. And so it didn't create these meaningful, beautiful social interactions. It created this thing where we hate our uncle now because we know too much about their like political affiliation or whatever. So it made Facebook a mess, frankly. And so now we're like going away from that. It's according to this article, and they're basically going to prioritize you seeing stuff that's not people you follow. So it's actually like quite a big change. And I think this is, memo was leaked, this Tom Allison, he actually gave an interview and didn't deny any of this. And, what Tom said is what we're really finding is that people want to connect over content. And so in a lot of where we're going on Facebook is trying to bring you the best content that's going to really cater to your interests, but then making it super easy to share that and discuss and connect with other people in your network over that, which is, I guess, why they're bringing Messenger back in. So yeah, this is interesting. Josh, thoughts on this?
Lauren, how often did you receive a memo like this while you were working at Facebook? Like, is this a rare occurrence? Does this happen all the time?
This is a rare one. No, like when they're totally overhauling like newsfeed, that's very rare. I mean, like they said, the last time was in 2018. It's rare.
Got it. I love the FAQ section. That's my favorite part. Mm-hmm. So the question, how is this different from our previous product priorities? The answer, well, our previous priorities were 1, mix shifting from long form to short form video, 2, strengthening product market fit for creators, 3, bridging large and small communities, 4, reducing negative experiences. Now the priorities are 1, make Reels successful, 2, build world-class recommendations technology, 3, unlock messaging-based sharing. And just a note on the reducing negative experiences, it's been removed as a product priority since it's more aptly tied to the product culture we are trying to build throughout our approach of being, quote, trustworthy, people-centric, and unified. Our focus is doing this holistically across all of our products as a permanent part of our culture as opposed to a short-term priority. And one more note from this Q&A, mm-hmm. What about creators? Is that still a priority? Well, succeeding with creators is required to succeed with both Reels and recommendations more broadly. While we are not calling out creators as a discrete priority, we continue to have a number of active work streams to support creators on both FB and IG. Specifically, we're continuing to invest in creator well-being and safety, improving the profile plus experience, scaling incentives and monetization, and investing in creator growth and network health. Just excellent Q&A here. I don't know if I agree with all of this, but it's a very well-written memo that answers a lot of my questions before they're being asked. So, Tom Allison, thank you for this. And I'm sure lots of the employees at Facebook welcome this type of very well thought out memo. Cool to see in person. Thanks for The Verge for making this available to all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is massive, right?
Yeah, huge.
And what else does Facebook have to do here? They got to try something like this. TikTok has stumbled upon this incredibly addictive, dominating social interactive / entertainment platform and tool set. I mean, you got to go after it, right?
I mean, yeah.
And so what's the best case scenario here? Best case scenario is Facebook becomes TikTok for suburban moms?
I guess so. I don't know. I was just thinking about when I was there, Instagram was really threatened by Snap. Like that was huge. Like there was, I feel like I've told this story before where we sent a bunch of creators to somewhere in Europe for like the MTV Music Awards, but like the European version, like the Eurovision, whatever they were called. And I wasn't there, but I was a bunch of American creators. And my sort of counterpart there was like messaging me the whole time, like, oh my God, they're just Snapchatting the whole time. Like everybody was like, they're on an Instagram trip and they're Snapchatting the whole time. We were like freaking out. And then, you know, between stories and everything else, like it was able, that was like the big move, right? Like that was the big thing that like, it was sort of just like, okay, I'm done. We did this now. So Facebook historically has been able to, you know, clone products from other competing platforms and win. So this is not the first time that they will have done this. Now, also they did this before I was there. There were stories about how when Google Plus came out, which was going to be Google's answer to Facebook, and they that was considered like a really real threat. And I remember when I was there, it was kind of like, haha, right. And I was like, no, they were really worried about it. So they created, do you remember like circles on Facebook? Do you remember that?
It was, yeah, like, briefly.
Which is funny because it's sort of like the internet's now back to that, where it's like, you know, creating like like smaller communities within your bigger community. And so like Facebook built all these products to copy that. And then what's funny is I can remember like they did that and then Google Plus kind of didn't take off. And then they ended up deprecating like basically all the products they had created to compete with them. And then the lesson there was like, you know, Zuckerberg saying stuff like, you know, it's not about, we shouldn't just look at competition to innovate. We need to innovate from internally. You know what I mean? It's not about that. Don't operate from a place of fear and all that sort of stuff. And like, here we are yet again. I'm not saying I blame them. I'm not saying this is wrong. I don't know how this is going to land, though. I have no idea.
And what a kind of Pandora's box Kevin Systrom opened up when he was like, oh, I like Snapchat. Let's just do that.
Yeah.
Let's do something different than that. You know, a little bit different. Let's tweak it a little bit to apply to Instagram. No. Let's just do that.
My favorite thing about that launch, though, which I, you know, I was very involved in, was how comms handled it. And they were just like, yep, this is a thing. Thanks, Snap, for it. You know, they got ahead of it. They weren't like, what? Snapchat does this too? No. Like, they were like, nope. Kevin Systrom was like, very innovative. Think it's great. We just think it's a feature, not a product. So we're just going to do that.
Love it.
Yeah.
And so now I feel like it's giving them license and opportunity to just do all of this stuff, which maybe they would have done a little bit more covertly in the past. I mean, they still are using language that isn't exactly like, TikTok's great. We're doing what they're doing.
No, yeah.
But more or less, they're saying that.
Yeah, totally. Okay, great. Love it. That's, well, good reporting. Very interesting. And we'll see what happens. Creators have got to move with their community to react to moments fast. That's the beauty of creator commerce platform Spring. It's instant gratification.
For example, let's say you just reached 10,000 followers. You can launch an NFT to celebrate. Or if the weather gets super hot, you can drop a summer collection of essentials. It's great, and you've got over 180 products at your fingertips.
So Josh, what do you define as summer essentials for fans? Bucket hat, a classic oversized tee we all know and love, bike shorts, maybe a yoga mat?
Maybe, check, maybe, and check. But those are just some of the new summer-ready products you can create with Spring and share with your fans. You can also design things like water bottles, tumblers, t-shirts, all the things your fans need for the heat.
So guys, act fast, get creating, give your fans what they want. Summer vibes are officially here. Okay, Josh, any uploads? There's one here that I know to you is going to be like a wah-wah upload. So I want to get ahead of it here. So Facebook, speaking of Facebook, they launched, I guess it's a business case study or something on their sort of business Facebook.com/business page, which is harness the power of creator marketing partnerships to help grow your business. And there's like a guide. There's this collaborate with creators to unlock meaningful connections, creativity, and growth. And like all the ways that you should be working with creators, like creators unlock consumer connection. 78% of consumers said that creators are influential in helping them discover new brands. 87% of consumers follow creators on Meta platforms. 71% of Facebook and Instagram users have taken a shopping action as a result of seeing content posted by a creator. Josh, I'm so sorry. I don't know what's happening this week, but I feel like whatever the cover of No Dumb Magazine is, we should just scrap it. And okay, this is literally, yes, Facebook. Yes, thank you. When I was there, I was trying so hard for them to do something like this. Like, we need to show the world, this is going back to like 2018, that like creators are doing big things on Facebook with brands. We need to do this. We need to wrap it up in a bow and show people, because they, agencies and brands, don't understand it. We are here like 4+ years later, and this is the most obvious, no duh, basic brand case study I've ever seen in my entire life. Glad it's finally here. Congratulations.
Lauren, I agree with you. This has been on the cover of Noda magazine maybe like a decade ago. But what is cool here in their defense is they've given a lot of data on performance, which I encourage everyone to go check out. You can find it at facebook.com/business, I think is the URL, just Google brand building with creator partnerships. And they have a bunch of different case studies where they're talking about brands working with creators and have stats like this. There's a 5x incremental completion registration using creators' content versus their business as usual average.
Right.
3x incremental purchases using creators' content versus their business as usual average. Branded content ads from a creator's handle outperformed in driving favorability lift versus brand ads with 81% confidence. I mean, these are real numbers and just show the efficacy of influencer marketing. And I'm here for it. Props to Facebook for putting this together. Maybe a little too late, maybe not. But definite props to them for having all this data in here, because I think it's really usable and something that lots of brand marketers can point to.
Absolutely.
Who knows if they're going to point to it to use it on Facebook or not, or just use it as leverage for doing branded content with creators on all the platforms. But I feel like it's a boon for the whole ecosystem. I like it.
Okay, Josh, anything else?
Lauren, a big download. The FTC says social media is rife with crypto scams and victims are losing hundreds of millions of dollars. I wouldn't say hundreds of millions, I'd probably say billions. But for anyone who's in the Web3 crypto space, you know that these scams are just part of this ecosystem. I think with any new and innovative technology that's also incredibly complicated, there are going to be bad actors, because there's a huge incentive for bad actors because they can make a ton of money very quickly. Yeah. So there are many bad actors in this ecosystem, and the FTC is hopefully coming after them in ways that they 100% absolutely should. One Twitter follow for those people that are interested in this. There is this one Web3 crypto sleuth called Zach XBT, that's ZACHXBT, who goes through all of this on-chain analysis to uncover all of these people that have done rug pulls in the Web3 NFT crypto space. It's well worth looking into for those who are interested.
And I think what's interesting about this kind of scam is I think with a lot of scams we hear happening to frankly, older people. And the most people that are being scammed with crypto, obviously, are people young. They say ages 20 to 49 because they're more interested. Like, you're not going to have a 65-year-old, lady that's going to be falling for a crypto scam. So they're targeting ostensibly people that feel like they're probably educated and understand either the space or the internet. And so it's gut-wrenching because people are just losing a ton of money. And so just, guys, don't give your credit card to anybody.
Lauren, they're not credit cards. They're not credit cards.
I can't. Just don't give anything to anybody.
We'll go over this in more detail some other time.
I gotta go. I gotta get ready for VidCon, Josh. We got stuff to do.
We got stuff to do. Lauren, I will see you telling scammers to buzz off and trying to contact their supervisors on the blockchain.
While I'm reading our Business Insider article, yes.
And if not then and there, next week on Creator Upload. Today's show was produced by Lauren Schnipper, me, Joshua Cohen, and Carmela Seth Suarez. It's edited by Jason Kang, and the original music is by London Bridge, who you can check out on Instagram at London Bridge Music. Please subscribe to Creator Upload on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Where do you listen to podcasts? While you're there, give us a rating, leave us a comment too. If you want to talk, hit us up at info@creatorupload.com. We're going to be at VidCon. We want to see you. We'll be at the industry track on the main stage, but hit us up with an email at info@creatorupload.com and we can try to arrange a time to say what up. If you like our show, please recommend it to a friend. If you love it, recommend it to everybody. Thanks for listening to Creator Upload, and we'll be back next week.